Always stuck in the middle with everyone here. Always trapped between Casey, Tim, and Matteo. I'm Chris. Hi, welcome to Left, Right, and Centre.
The group is back.
That was really good, Chris.
Oh, no, I'm pretty smooth.
I was really, really impressed by that introduction for all of us.
I started to sort of go a bit higgledy-piggledy towards the end, a bit round and round and round.
Well, you didn't quite introduce who was who.
I said Casey and Tim and Chris in like the order of where I'm seeing people in like a clockwise direction.
From left to right, yep.
And we're all reunited for the first time in quite a while, aren't we?
Yeah, the boys are back.
It's been a month. It's been a month since we were all back together. I'd like to say, as the only person who didn't take a week off, it's good to see all of these fresh faces back.
Yeah, well...
To be fair, Tim, you took 10 minutes off.
I guess we'll see if your decision was justified when... The exam results come back.
Oh, yeah, great. Thanks, Matteo. So why were you out of here, Casey?
I'm actually coming back this week kind of slinking with my tail between my legs. I heard the other day that Triple M have fired Miff Warhurst and Peter Hillier. So I went up to them. I thought I could maybe take their breakfast lot. I'm kind of coming back with my tail between my legs. They like my qualifications. They like my bachelor's degree in readology.
Mm-hmm.
They liked my attitude. I'm a go-getting guy. They just thought I needed a bit more experience, so now I'm come back down to earth with you guys.
Right. So you know, they thought you weren't as funny as Peter Hillier.
Can I make a suggestion? Yeah.
But funnier than Miff Warhurst.
Tim, that's a hold on. Miff Warhurst is much funnier than Peter Hillier.
That is true.
And can I actually make a suggestion? Maybe the problem, maybe the reason they didn't give you the job is that you weren't me.
Yeah, you make a good point.
I think the problem was actually one of overqualification. I mean, the step from community radio to commercial radio.
Matteo, I have to cut you off there. Don't say that. It will jeopardise our gig with Nova.
Of course, no.
Matteo and Kate, for those of you who don't know, Christopher and Matteo are in negotiations with Nova.
Super secret contract negotiations that no one knows about.
They're commencing.
If we sort of, you know, if we speak about it on air, it'll violate the contract. So we
can't speak too loudly or noticeably about our ongoing contract negotiations with Nova.
Indeed. Casey and I will just be left here by ourselves.
So, but that's okay. Right, I'm going to Triple M.
What are we... Tim will be left by himself.
Well, look, I think I'm the most... Certainly the feedback the show as a whole has been getting is that I've been the most entertaining.
No. The feedback the show has been getting is your beard is the most entertaining part of the show.
Or it was when it was still around.
Can I just say, though, Tim, the one problem I'd have with you doing the show by yourself is that it would just be called Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure it can
it's
be
not,
left,
it's
right,
not a particularly
and
snappy name.
I think I have the intellectual acumen to hold many positions at once. Anyway, now that we've done away with this meaningless banter, has there been any important political news stories?
Very important political news stories. New campaign strategies by the two major federal parties. They've got big old trucks.
I'd call it a truck off.
I'd call it a truck off. I think we should back the truck off and hear out this story. The Liberal Party's launched a debt truck. They last had one in 1996 against Paul Keating, complaining about the level of foreign debt that Australia's got. So how they're doing that? They're driving around with a big truck with a banner on the side.
Mm-hmm. And, you would expect somebody like the Labor Party, a good solid opposition, sound in their economic management, to take the moral high ground on this issue.
Did you just call the Labor Party the opposition? Good sound opposition?
No, sorry. Did I? I didn't mean to say good sound government. By the way.
Well, do you want to know what the Labor Party have done in response?
Instead of taking the moral high ground, what have they done, Kate?
They've got another truck.
No, they haven't. It's more like a mobile billboard. It's not a truck. It's much less impressive than the Liberal one, which is actually a truck. If you look it up, Turnbull has a big, massive truck, and Labor has like a, you know, one of those crappy ads that you see.
Yeah.
So is this going to result in a change in the polls, the fact that the Liberals' truck was actually far more impressive?
I think it could backfire on the Liberals, I think, because a truck would be more expensive to hire, and you ask where the money's coming from.
Especially in these climes.
In these climes, is that like the climate and times combined? Climes? That's a great new word, Tim. What do you think of that word?
It does not get my stamp of approval.
I think my favourite part of the story was when the Labor Party launched their truck. The Financial Services Minister, Chris Bowen, unveiled it. The slogan on the truck is, "Australia has the lowest debt level of any major economy." And then to support that, he says, "We're outlining the facts, as described by the IMF, the World Bank, the OECD and others. We're communicating that in a very clear way by the truck."
There's only so much dignity that sentence can carry when it finishes with the words, "the truck."
And he goes on to say, "It's appropriate in modern political engagement that parties engage in this way, by truck."
I think everybody in the country knows, including those who are taking part, knows that this is just extraordinary petulance.
Both parties have denied that this is a political stunt.
No. And look, I think that the most blatant sort of example of spin in this, apart from the fact that it was ridiculous in the first place by the Liberals, is that Labor then says, I mean, Mr. Bowen, who Casey quoted before, then goes on to say, Mr. Turnbull's entitled to his truck, but he should have facts on it, not erroneous claims.
Oh, I think it's just a big truck off to the voters, really, the whole thing.
I'm a bit trucked off. I think it's time maybe to go to a song. And this week, I picked one of my favourites, which is the 2004 Democratic National Congress Speech 1 by Barack Obama.
Chris, we've talked about this before. You tried this stunt on us before.
We have no Obama speeches on the show. That's the rule.
We're not going to play this.
There's music in the start when he's introduced by the...
Just play the backup song,
Casey. What do you want?
No, just what we have.
Okay, we'll see what we've got on the computer.
This is Student Radio at Adelaide Uni on 101.5.
It wasn't a bad backup song, Chris.
Oh, no, it's a fantastic song, but it's not the 2004 Democratic National Congress Speech 1.
What was it?
It was In Context by Field Music from their fantastic album Tones of Town.
On Radio Adelaide, it is 11 past 12, and I didn't mention it earlier, but happy NAIDOC Week, everyone.
Indeed.
Hey, it's NAIDOC Week.
Ooh.
And to celebrate that, we're going to talk about something unrelated to NAIDOC Week.
Completely unrelated.
Martin Hamilton Smith, I believe. There's been a bit of controversy about him. You could say more controversy, perhaps, than about the new hospital that's being built. But we're not talking about that either. I just thought I'd make a comparison about the level of controversy. Anyway, his leadership is struggling.
Struggling would be a way of putting it.
Anyway, earlier in the week, or over the weekend, there was a vote on the leadership, which he initially took part in, and won of the Liberal MPs.
On a knife edge, though.
It won a knife edge, 11 to 10, and there are 22 members, so one abstained. We don't know who yet, but basically they decided to have a revote. I suppose it's something to do with their, they must have a system in place.
It's just a way that because he figured he didn't have enough of a majority. Yeah. This has all come about because of this dodgy gate scandal as a Sunday Mail poll, which said they were going to face annihilation, lose 8 of their 14 seats at the next election. If things stayed as they were.
Mm.
So there was a spill called...
We'd be living in a one-party state.
Effectively, yeah.
Mm.
Martin Hamilton Smith put his name up, as did Vicky Chapman.
Who was the deputy at the time.
Martin Hamilton Smith just won, and he effectively at the time said, "All right, I'm going to stand down. I don't have enough of a majority."
Mm-hmm.
He was talked down by a couple of senior MPs, but has since decided, yes, he is going to stand down. So there's going to be another vote tomorrow morning.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been interesting. There are three nominees for tomorrow, Vicky Chapman, Isabel Redmond, and Mitch Williams. And I must credit a dear Parisian friend of ours with a statistic that given the combination of the number of leadership spills there have been in the past week and the small number of MPs from the Liberal Party, actually 20% of Liberal Party state MPs will have been nominees for the leadership position in the last week. So I think that's quite an interesting little aside.
And I think it paints a quite colourful French-style picture of how much turmoil the state Liberal Party's in.
Yeah, but seriously, folks, what do we see as being the outcome here? Because I can't see anything good for the Libs.
Just quickly going back to the Parisian thing, if you do want like a really bipartisan sort of look at state politics, or in fact, you know, federal politics, I'd suggest wehatetories.blogspot.com.
It's not what it sounds like at all.
Exactly what it sounds like. But
basically, going back to the original spill, I think on Saturday morning, and Hamilton Smith's subsequent decision to stand down. Sorry, that's just a bit of a strange occurrence in the studio. Basically, he won 11-10, but obviously he saw that, you know, that gave him precisely no mandate at all, no confidence in his leadership, and so clearly,
especially with one person abstaining,
with one abstainer. So you know, just as much as he could have, you know, gone sort of his MPs and said, "Look, I have the votes. Vote for me in like the next vote." Those 10 people could have said, "Well, look, we have the vote, so vote against Hamilton Smith." So obviously, he just came to the conclusion that it wasn't worth it and that he wouldn't be leading a united Liberal Party.
Absolutely, but I think you've got to have a bit more of a focus towards the future. I mean, it used to be Martin 2010. And by the by, I think there is. I think it's worth a mention that Martin Hamilton Smith, I don't think, is finished. I think he could very well sit back on the. Although I think his seat he holds by a margin of I think 5 or 8 well, percent, something like in that range.
Indeed, in this Sunday Mail poll, his seat was one of the ones that would be
exactly.
lost.
Exactly. So I mean, if they are going quite as badly as it appears that they are, then perhaps he won't. But I think there's a possibility that he'll hang around for another 5 or 6 years. Maybe
I don't know. Well, I mean, possibly. Tim, I'd consider the possibility that actually, I mean, not being leader anymore might perhaps be good for his electorate. Possibly, and I'm speculating, but it would give him more time to focus on his local community and perhaps.
Yeah.
I still have questions as to, though, whether we will have a United Liberal Party as of tomorrow, because the numbers coming through at the moment seem to have. Early on, we had Isabel Redmond as the kind of front runner, Vicky Chapman as the underdog, Mitch Williams not really regarded very well. Current numbers coming out with Vicky Chapman at 12 votes to Isabel Redmond's 10, maybe. Mm-hmm. So it's still a very close
And
vote.
Mitch Williams, I'd like to point out, that gives him
effectively.
Votes,
I don't think no one...
A bit of a non-factor.
Won't he vote?
He'll probably vote for himself, yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Well,
I
mean, how are those numbers come up with? Those numbers are ridiculous.
This is what Adelaide Now are reporting at the moment. I don't know whether Williams will take pull his name out. I don't know what's going to happen, but... Yeah.
Well, but if that's to be believed, then it's going to be precisely as disunited as it was in the past. And, I don't see any leader getting any sort of clear mandate.
And more importantly, how does the party get elected?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think they don't, Tim, at this point.
One of the reasons Vicky Chapman was cited as having picked up some more votes was because party sources within the Liberals said that they should consider the party's financial situation as well when they were casting their vote. And Isabel Redmond's had to cancel fundraisers, and that's a quote from a senior party source. That's not something you want at the boardroom table.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, if their situation's gotten so perilous that they will lose a lot of the seats that they hold in this next election, it won't be enough to turn it around by the election after. And so, are they looking two elections down the track?
Three, maybe. I don't know.
Such is the hole that they're currently in.
Anyway, I think we've had enough of to talk about that. What are we going to go to now?
This. Hello and welcome to People Who Look Like Things. Today's letter is from a Mr. Hounslow of Sussex, who says he looks like his brother. I'm not entirely sure Mr. Hounslow has quite got the hang of this show. Keen listeners will remember a few weeks ago when I read another letter from Mr. Hounslow in which he professed to having a striking resemblance to his father. So, for the benefit of our listeners, Mr. Hounslow, if you are listening, I've explained the rules once. If you're not going to take the show seriously, then please stop writing. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder about where my career can possibly go from here. I don't get paid, and I have to sit and read ridiculous things like this. And why? Because Mr. Bloody Jones Hounslow. That's why. I mean, how simple could it possibly be? The title largely explains the premise of the show. People who look like things. Not people who bear a passing resemblance to close relatives. I mean, you really have to question the health of some people. Anyway... We seem to be out of time, so now for something completely different.
And a lovely lady called Chris called us up just during that song on 8303 5000, just wanting people to check their bank statements because there's been stories of people's PIN numbers being stolen, money going missing, slipping through cracks. So just check your bank statements, make sure you haven't lost lots of money.
So that's where all my money went.
Somewhere else your money's gone is towards a subscription to Radio Adelaide.
Yep, that's me too.
And me and Chris.
Yeah, all of us.
It's only $52 or $26 concession, and it really helps keep us on air. We get most of our funding, a little bit from the university, a little bit from the government, a lot from subscribers.
Absolutely.
And prizes as well. You can win a package for two at the Kangaroo Island Wilderness Retreat, valued at $1,100 if you subscribe during the month of July. Wouldn't that be nice, Tim?
Yeah, it would be great. How do we go about doing that?
You call 8303 5000.
Or you come into the office, which is on 228 North Terrace. That's just opposite the uni during our office hours, which is between 9 and 5 from Monday to Friday.
Yeah, and people will be very helpful.
Absolutely. They always are here.
Hey, you mob out there. I'm Chantel Henley, Noonuckle Mullanjali woman. Just want to wish you all a deadly NAIDOC and stay tuned to Radio Adelaide on 101.5 FM.
There's been some unrest in China too.
Indeed. Some significant unrest in China.
You're kind of suggesting, you know, the massive unrest in the Liberal Party compares.
Yeah, and that fighting I had with you earlier.
Right.
Indeed. Yes, the Xinhua province, I believe. No, Xinhua... Am I getting that mixed up, Chris?
No, Xinhua, I believe, is the news outlet.
No, sorry. I must apologise to all those people out there who know more about this than me. Xinjiang province, because I'm probably going to mix those up a couple of times. Xinjiang, which is a province in northwestern China. It's a semi-autonomous region. It's one of these regions in China similar to Tibet in some ways, where there are, you know, it's a region that is, you know, historically... A certain ethnic group has lived there in Xinhua. It's the Uyghur. And there's been some significant unrest in there, riots that have been sparked by...
Yeah. Well, basically, the riots started over the killing of two ethnic Uyghurs by the ethnic majority Han Chinese, murdered by, or killed by a couple of co-workers in Shaoguan, Guangdong, in a group fight between the workers. And this eventually turned more violent, I suppose. Mm. The initial rumours that several of the Uyghur men had actually raped Han women in the factory, and of course, this was seen as a slur. I mean, there were people killed from these initial outbreaks of violence, which really did spill over a few days ago.
Mm. And I think one of the difficulties here is that a lot of the most accurate and extensive reports come from Xinhua, which is the Chinese sort of state media outlet, and so in some respects you've got to be very cautious talking about the numbers.
That's true, Tim. But I mean, I think in terms of the general picture, a lot of the foreign media, like there was a journalist from the Times and another from the BBC World Service. Yep. And they all said that pretty much, in this case, they didn't feel, in terms of the riots themselves, China had much to hide about what was actually happening.
Indeed. Yeah.
And so I think that.
It apparently looks as though that these riots have been predominantly, you know, the initial ones certainly were predominantly Uyghur, who I think the reports of large groups of Uyghur walking around with knives and batons and things attacking Han Chinese.
Mm.
So yeah, it's certainly not good for that. But I think this sort of can lead into a broader issue in how. I think China, perhaps not in this case, has conducted itself poorly, but I think issues like this are in significant part because of latent tension between how people feel that especially large state-driven migrations of Han Chinese into areas where historically another ethnic group has predominantly lived.
That's absolutely right, Tim. And I think the trouble is, I mostly agree, but I probably would say I think the Chinese government has conducted itself poorly in this case, because obviously they've downplayed the way that their policy and particularly that sort of policy has impacted on the Uyghur. And there's been a movement for revolution by some elements of the Uyghur community in China for several decades now, I think. Mm. And certainly the tension's always been there, but it's just what this does is sort of brings it to the surface and shows you, I guess, you know, the strength of feeling that.
Well, I mean, if we're to believe that these tensions, these are latent, perhaps they were before, these tensions are exacerbated by sort of state-led migration, well then... Perhaps we have to ask just how much of a role the Chinese government has had in urging these people to migrate or out of the cities and into the villages.
I think it would be fair to say that in the past, certainly in the past 30 years, the Chinese government has seen large group migration of Han Chinese as a method of controlling.
I think Tibet
is an example of that situation where the population. I think the demographics of it are now more of them are Han Chinese than not.
To be fair, I mean, Tim, it's moral policy, but it's effective. You know, it's something that civilizations, when they try to colonize particular areas, have done for a long time. I mean, early on in the United States, what a lot of the colonists tried to do was sort of build up their population in a particular area so that the Indian tribes couldn't, you know, attack them with as much strength or overcome them. I think the the degree to which China has held together for the time it has, despite the diversity, I mean, the incredible diversity of its population, is partly testament to that. As
but
well as to
yeah, absolutely. But it as a method, you mean you talk about holding China together? That I think China has been held together, you know, in spite of these large ethnic divisions through the extensive use of this tactic as a method of subduing.
I'm just saying
populations.
But I wonder how far you can question the legitimacy of these en masse sort of movements of people. I mean, surely people are free to settle anywhere within
but
a
that's
country.
That's only if you accept choosing. Only if you accept that that is a that it should be a part of the country. You see,
and this
which is often in doubt.
Yeah, this for me actually, I think this is one of the quite a significant moral problem for me because I couldn't. I mean, I see this is a whole separate kettle of fish, I imagine, but I see parallels in Israel where I think I sort of see a great difficulty is created when there is large, you know, concentrated and organised migrations of one ethnic group into a region where they have not historically lived. And because it creates massive moral problems one or two generations down the track, where you then have another generation, as in Israel, where you now have a generation of Israelis who weren't a part of the Zionist migration.
And who probably feel quite strongly that they have a right to... their home now, I suppose.
Yeah, they're born there. That's their home. And this is my great dissatisfaction with the great injustice, I think, of situations like this, especially in places like China, is that what they are using is a tactic which will, I think, creates a sort of a choice between two evils down the track that eventually validates their original course of action, which, you know...
Yeah. Well, it's a multi-dimensional, multifaceted topic. We've scratched the surface, but now we have this.
The Internet. Nature's Dictionary. The first stop repository of all worldly knowledge. But there does seem to be rather a large bias towards useless information rather than actual interesting stuff. For example... Nowhere on the internet can I find out why public toilets extol the virtues of their new antibacterial cubes, which eliminate the need for flushing. The idea is sound enough, but the problem arises when there simply aren't any cubes, a situation overlooked because of the ability of these hypercubes to cover any problems relating to urinal hygiene. The idea of there simply not being any cubes is unthinkable. Yet the internet either can't or won't tell me why this happens. And perhaps less helpfully, it won't let me get in touch with the owners and tell them about their toilet cubes and their conspicuous absence. On the other hand, it can tell me that in 1981, the Pentagon spent $6 million finding out whether burning the photo of a Soviet missile would destroy the missile. So it's not all bad. But is this common thinking? And if so, perhaps that is the root of the problem. Perhaps the reason the internet is so full of crap is not simply that it is easier not to do anything, but rather that the cheap thrill of reading or listening to a seemingly irrelevant, if hilarious, piece of so-called information is far more pleasant than reading something which is informative, but ultimately irritating, as most informative things are. It seems that odd humour is simply a bigger draw than actual information. Ask yourself, would you rather hear about a new fridge which will be a good, cheap replacement for your old one, or would you like to know that Don Featherston was the inventor of the pink plastic flamingo? Now, you may be thinking that these are examples tailored to my own side of the argument, and to a certain extent, say a percentage in the high 90s, you'd be right. With this in mind, I'd just like to make it clear that I'm a big fan of irrelevant information. For instance, in 1978, singer Claude François died trying to change a light bulb while standing in a bathtub full of water. But the internet can surely do far more for society than merely letting people know that in 1993, for example, a research centre in Yokohama developed a scientific study called Elucidation of Chemical Compounds Responsible for Foot Malodor, with the results found to be that people who believe they had foot odour did, and those who don't, don't. The internet should be doing something more useful. Like letting me commercially develop my idea of an ice cream which has the taste and shape of a lobster. This, then, is a plea. People, we need to start developing reasonable uses for the internet, while there is still some internet left.
Student Radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
I've brought my certificate of readology tonight. I should be able to do a better job than someone did last night.
Oh, yeah. I think someone did a brilliant job.
Guys, are you ready for this?
We're ready.
According to a social analyst in the US, a white flight to Facebook has turned MySpace into a quote-unquote digital ghetto. Dana Boyd said that the emergence of Facebook as a popular alternative to MySpace had sparked a migration of educated and wealthy white users, while non-whites had stuck together on MySpace. Ms. Boyd said that we might as well face an uncomfortable reality. What happened was modern-day white flight. The people there are more likely to be brown or black and to have a set of values that terrifies white society. Through interviews with American teenagers since 2006, Ms. Boyd has found that teens who use Facebook are far more likely to talk down to those who exclusively use MySpace, believing it to be quote-unquote less cultured and quote-unquote more cheesy. Guys, is it just me or is Ms. Boyd being somewhat alarmist about this? Surely a class divide among social networking sites isn't such a big deal?
What is that?
She is by far the most worried about this. She's the one talking about values, or no, like offending the values of white society.
The thing that strikes me is that this is almost completely ridiculous. There is one thing she gets right, and there is a general feeling among Facebook users that MySpace is inferior, but it's nothing to do
and
with
cheesy.
Race or colour. It's to do with
it's
the fact that...
it's not very good.
No, well, it's the fact that most MySpace users, in my experience, are 13 years old. It's an ageist thing.
But I want to take this back.
Thing.
It's not a...
When did it become acceptable to use the word ghetto only to describe something, a place where black people are?
No. It was used to describe Jews and gypsies during World War II as well.
A ghetto is not a good thing. There are three or four levels
I think that's what she was trying to imply. I think she was trying to imply somehow
a white flight, though. But
people being left in MySpace, you know, like they were...
Brown or black.
This is yet another example of social networking on the interweb leading to unhealthy social stratification.
A British woman has been reunited with her cat after seeing it wander the set of a live political talk show she was watching. The Daily Mail reports that Jackie Ellery was sitting at home last Thursday night when a friend called and urged her to turn on the BBC. Mrs. Ellery was shocked to see her ginger Tom Tango on the set of the show Question Time, which was filming at a local school in Cornwall. After stealing the spotlight from the politicians and pundits on the show, Tango was eventually caught by a stage manager and has since become a minor celebrity in Cornwall and been reunited with its owner. Mrs. Ellery remarked, it's lovely. He's a mischievous cat anyway, and because we live so close to the school, he's often in the school grounds. I've even been asked for his portograph. Guys, surely this is the first recorded instance of a person actually benefiting from watching politicians talk?
What the hell's a portograph?
Well, it's simple, really. It's some sort of paw mark that the cat is urged to give under duress.
You get in, No. That, look, he's probably loving it. He's enjoying his 15 minutes of fame.
Cats don't do things
think about it. 15 minutes of fame for a cat is a lot longer than it is for a normal person. No, he's enjoying
time.
Cat years, exactly.
Cats don't do things that aren't sleeping voluntarily.
What about eating?
Yeah, those two.
So Tim is a cat, or at least cats are very much like Tim.
If A is B, then it's
And can I just say, a portograph, can I explain how it works specifically? What you do is you get an ink, you know, like ink from stamps? And you stamp the thing, just like Casey might press a button, and then you put it on, press it down onto a piece of paper.
A handprint, but with a cat.
I really like the happy ending in the story.
I like Casey's explanation better.
An Englishman who used nail clippers to give himself a circumcision has been taken to hospital for emergency treatment. The unnamed young man of Stevenage, Hertfordshire, had the wound disinfected to cleanse it before being given a bed in the observation ward. A medic said that this is something we would advise men never to attempt. The results can be quite horrific and long-lasting and have quite an effect on a man's sexual performance. Using a nail clipper must, of course, excruciating pain, even if he had had a few drinks beforehand. I thought it was painful enough when I cut too much off my nail. Was he at least successful?
Yeah, I'm not sure what constitutes success when you're attempting a circumcision with nail clippers. And also, isn't that kind of... It's not exactly flattering that you're attempting to get rid of the foreskin just with nail clippers.
It's romantic.
I think it's daring. Like, if MacGyver were ever to have a circumcision, nail clippers, it's all he's got to hand. He's got to make do.
He's got to circumcise himself.
No, but like, there are circumstances where it's medically useful.
That
like, for instance, if the foreskin's
got to go.
Because there are times where I think the foreskin can get in the way of, like...
It can, like, get caught
on
something.
Well, it can get in the way of, for instance, urine flow. And
I'm going to put a stop to this right now.
Yeah,
Moving from Hertfordshire and that disgusting conversation, an annual beer festival in Herefordshire has been stopped early after it was, quote-unquote, drunk completely dry, say organisers. Despite an emergency delivery of 18 barrels of drink on Saturday afternoon, the Sunday session of the Beer on the Wye Festival had to be cancelled. Camera, the Herefordshire campaign for Real Ale, said, quote, the cider bar was closing at about 9 p.m. and virtually the last drop of beer went by closing time. Family fun events scheduled for the Sunday had also had to be cancelled, but due to a lack of food, not alcohol. The festival usually attracts about 3,000 people over its 3 days, but this year over 3,800 had attended by Saturday night. It was promised that the 2010 festival would order more beer and have a bigger backup supply. I guess this begs the question, is beer global financial crisis proof?
Well, clearly not. And, you know, I'd just like to say, just as a bit of background to this, in the UK they do actually have, you know how we have the emergency numbers for the emergency services?
Yes.
I think they have a separate one for emergency beer supplies.
So, yeah. Well, clearly no one knew that until it was a little bit too late.
Well, no, that's where they would have got the beer from, but I think it's like...
too little too late.
Exactly.
Well, I just hope it's organised better next year, because the people of Herefordshire, yeah. They deserve better. They deserve more beer. I don't know how it's pronounced, but anyway, they deserve
better. It's pronounced beer, Mateo. You did it right.
Very good, Chris.
In what is possibly the least surprising news ever, a study by psychologists at a North Carolina university has found that men are much more likely to come to a consensus when defining what they find attractive in the opposite sex. The Wake Forest...
than women are?
No?
You just said much more likely to.
Christopher, you never ever interrupt somebody with it.
No, we established that you can, didn't we, Casey? Initially, we just established you could, just to clarify.
We haven't established anything apart from the fact that Casey's talking.
I was just saying, I wasn't clear whether you were saying...
much more likely than we once thought. The Wake Forest University study found physical features defined men's view on the attractiveness of different women, with women who look thin and seductive getting the highest ratings. Funny that. Men were also found to be attracted to women who displayed confidence. Women showed a more diverse range of responses, with the same men garnering positive and negative responses. The researchers said their findings had implications for further understanding eating disorders and the pressure put on women regarding ideal body shape and image. Guys, would I be wrong in saying the money that went to this study could have been used perhaps better?
Yes, absolutely.
I
would be wrong.
I say take the money that they used for this study, and instead, had they given it to the Beer on the Wye festival...
Exactly.
Hold on, was it a British study?
It was an American study.
Why would Americans be giving money to a British
because
festival?
Because this was a waste of everyone's money and time. Not just money and time of Americans. They published a study that everyone knew the results of beforehand.
I just can't... I can't...
Thin
I
and
can't
seductive.
Fathom this.
That's what we go for.
Like, what a surprise!
I'm pretty sure seductive. That isn't that what it means?
But also,
men find seductive women attractive. There we go.
It's like it's begging the question. You know, what is attractive is attractive. Well, thank you. That's good to know.
Thank you, North Carolina.
Hey guys, what happens when you put an imam, a priest, a rabbi, and a Buddhist monk in a room with 10 atheists? Aside from an elaborate joke, Turkish TV station Kanal T hopes the resulting game show, where the four spiritual authorities attempt to convert a group of non-believers, is a rating success. The prize for converts will be a pilgrimage to a holy site of their chosen faith: Mecca for Muslims, the Vatican for Christians, Jerusalem for Jews, and Tibet for Buddhists. However, many religious authorities in the secular Muslim country are not amused, claiming the concept cheapens faith. The Religious Affairs Directorate is, at the time of writing, refusing to provide an imam for the show. The makers of the show, called Penitents Compete, are perhaps ironically unrepentant. Seyhan Solu, Kanal T chief executive, told Reuters that we are giving the biggest prize in the world, the gift of belief in God. We don't approve of anyone being an atheist. A team of theologians will ensure that the atheists are truly non-believers and not simply seeking the fame or the holiday. Some 200 people have applied to be contestants on the show. I don't see anything bad coming from this. It's a good idea, right, guys?
Absolutely. Well, we need more of it. I don't see why it has to be put on a game show.
No, look, when I think of Europe or countries at least straddling Europe and Asia and the Middle East, I think of tolerance and religious harmony.
You know, I think this is brilliant, and actually, I think we could do it on our own. We could do a version of it in the show right now.
No,
Tim, convert us.
This is not a good idea.
Tim is the only religious member of the crew, so he's the only one who converts us atheists. You don't believe in people believing in atheism, right? You've got to convert us, Tim. Convert.
I'm stopping your ranting. A skier.
No.
What?
No, because... thank you.
A skier who fell into a crevice was saved from plummeting 700 feet to his death by his mobile phone, The Sun reports. David Fitzherbert was skiing down a glacier in the Matterhorn and Monterosa peaks in the Swiss Alps when the snow beneath him gave way. He fell 70 feet before becoming wedged between two rocks due to the approximately half-inch-wide BlackBerry in his breast pocket. The device still worked after keeping him stuck for 2 hours before he was rescued. Fitzherbert was flown to a burn hospital, suffering hypothermia, concussion, a broken jaw, broken teeth, other facial injuries and cracked ribs. He stayed there for 10 days and remarkably used the BlackBerry to call his wife in the UK. Upon his return home, Mr. Fitzherbert wrote to Vodafone, the supplier of the BlackBerry, to thank them. Guys, it seems that Vodafone go the extra mile to look after their customers. Should we switch from our current phone companies in order to get that extra security? Or should we just be thanking BlackBerry, maybe?
I think that would be inappropriate advertising, Casey. We shouldn't discuss that. More to the point, I actually think this is a compelling reason why Barack Obama kept his BlackBerry. He knows what they can do. He knows how durable they are. He knows that it could save him in an assassination attempt.
He would have fallen into a crevice.
Or someone would have tried to kill him, and he had it in front of his, heart, and it stopped a bullet.
Isn't this extraordinary? I'm just flabbergasted at how extraordinary that coincidence is.
Yeah, well,
I have no witty, funny comments to make like my panelists.
Look, of all the people that fall into crevices on mountains, someone has to be saved by their phone. Yeah. It's just probability.
Casey taking his traditional scientific perspective thinks this is just a confirmation bias, guys. Nothing significant here.
Crackberry indeed.
The world of Mexican midget wrestling is in mourning after two of its most famous stars were apparently poisoned by fake prostitutes. Alberto and Alejandro Perez Jimenez were found dead in a hotel room after being drugged and robbed. The women who spiked the twins' drinks are believed to be members of an organized criminal gang who poses prostitutes to attract victims. They normally knock out their victims, but the same dose was too much for the two brothers, known in the business as Alapita, Little Death, and Espectrito 3, Little Ghost the Third. The brothers began their careers 17 years ago in a tag team called Los Diablitos, the Small Devils. I can't speak Mexican. And occasionally crossed over into mainstream American wrestling. There were conflicting reports as to whether the prostitutes had been arrested. Guys, is this the most surreal crime you've ever heard of?
Casey, can I just say it's called Spanish?
Yeah.
Sorry. I feel like an idiot now.
you look like one.
No, he didn't just make a funny. Well, I could correct the pronunciation, but instead I'll say that our doubts about this story notwithstanding, it's my favourite RFN story of the year, and it'll take a lot of beating. No, Chris.
Chris, this is the most insensitive one we've done.
I'm offended, Mateo.
Chris, Mexican midget wrestlers killed by fake prostitutes. The world of Mexican midget wrestling is in mourning.
You're such a sensitive chap, Mateo. Honestly.
Well, I mean, we're not
no
one...
No comment.
We're not one...
No comment.
Fine.
And we've had a comment from Michael wanting to know why ghettos are bad. He says he lives in one. He doesn't mind it that much. Well, Michael, look up the history of the word ghetto and I think you'll find out.
Can I just say briefly, have you ever noticed that it seems like most of our listeners are named Michael? Is that a bit suspicious?
Everyone that writes in at least.
Yeah.
On Radio Adelaide, it's 7:07. In Kyoto, it's currently 26 degrees, 2 degrees more than the average. So obviously the Kyoto Protocol's not having the desired effect. Guys, are you ready for fast money?
What's fast money?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I'm ready.
Well, we've got a 1 minute on the clock. Here we go. Tim, Deputy Prime Minister Julia Gillard described today's Fair Pay Commission decision to freeze the minimum wage at its current rate as A, disappointing, B, reasonable in this economic climate, C, tough but fair, or D, as long as I still get a pay rise this year, I couldn't care less.
I'd say B.
Incorrect. It was disappointing. The first elephant born in Australia was successfully delivered over the weekend at Taronga Zoo, Mateo. How cute was it?
I'm going to say false. It was not cute.
It was truly hideous. I'll give you half a point. Chris, what are the exact odds that Mikhail Gorbachev is the Antichrist?
I'd say 200%.
The correct answer is 860 quadrillion, 609 trillion, 175 billion, 188,282,000, and 100 to 1, as calculated by Robert W. Fade of Greenville, South Carolina.
Wow.
Tim, I haven't got the answer to that question, so I'm going to skip it. Tim, Alec Baldwin had recently stated he's seriously considering running for Congress and has been approached to run for governor of Ohio. To which source did he state this ambition? A, the Wall Street Journal, B, the New York Times, C, MSNBC, or D, Playboy magazine?
Playboy.
Yes, you're correct. Mateo, still on entertainment news, how many people are around the... we're out of time. Can't finish that last question.
I would have won with the correct answer.
But I do have a bonus question, and I'm going to open it up to all of you. So the first person, buzz in just by saying your name. First person to buzz in gets the opportunity to answer.
Timothy.
There are five options. I want you to wait until I finish all five options.
He has to answer the question now. He has to answer the question right now.
And if you get it wrong, you're out.
Yeah, you're out.
I'm going to say C.
You don't get to answer the question until I've...
Damn it.
No.
But he's out anyway.
Yep, fair enough.
You don't know if the... But you're out anyway. Mateo and Chris, still on Michael Jackson, which of the following pieces of Jackson memorabilia was recently auctioned on eBay? Was it A box of the brand of gravy powder that Michael was once spotted consuming, B, dance lessons with someone who once watched a video of YouTube of Michael Jackson dancing, C, a moonwalking Cheeto, D, one of the two left shoes he wore during
It was B, the YouTube one.
I haven't finished the options yet.
What?
And that's not your name.
See, I'm still in it, you see, because I didn't say my name.
D, one of the two left shoes that he wore during his Two Left Shoes tour, or E, a friendship bracelet that a fan once made but never had the opportunity to give to Jackson owing to his tragic death mere days before the bracelet was made.
Mateo.
Mateo, what?
Was it A?
It was not A. Anyone else?
Christopher. D.
Incorrect.
No one wins.
Tim did actually have it correct at the start. It was C. A moonwalking
Cheeto. Moonwalking? What?
It sold for $35.18.
This is... Look.
I don't understand.
If ever there needed to be more proof of me being smarter than everybody else on the panel.
No, you're being lucky. A Cheeto is a small chip.
Yeah. Yes.
It can't.
I'll put a picture. We'll put a picture up on the blog.
Isn't a Cheeto a ring?
No, that's a cheese. Cheetos are spherical, I think, and cheesy, but not moonwalking. They can't.
It's not a chip if it's spherical. It's like a ball.
What are we going to go to now, Casey?
This.
Well, welcome once again to the joke of the week. This week's joke is as follows: why do you need 5 mice to power a mini? Well, that's the joke of the week, and we'll have the punchline for you next week. And now to last week's punchline, which is: because the third was a wooden leg. Well, that's enough comedy for one week. Back to the show.
Hey, Claire, I think I've got one.
Let me see.
I gotta get out of here.
We can't release him here, Clayton.
No, you're right. But I know where he'll be right at home.
Songcatcher, where you'll find local songwriters in the wild.
Radio Adelaide, 101.5 FM, Monday night at 9 p.m.
Previously on Live Music Fest.
That was the first time my band played live on radio. And
6 days of live performing.
That was really great. And now we've got our 8-track professional recording.
More
and we're doing
than 100 hours of live music.
Being part of the festival was the best thing ever.
This September. Live Music Fest 09 on Radio Adelaide.
If you play in a band, group, orchestra, or by yourself, apply by registering at radio.adelaide.edu.au.
Chris is whinging because he didn't get to answer as many questions as everyone else during Fast Money, so I'm going to ask him one more question.
Hey, I'm not saying I'd win.
I'm going to ask you one more question. You've lost anyway. Mateo was the winner.
No,
Didn't Mateo win on half a point? I didn't Mateo win on half a point.
He won on one half of a point. Everyone else got zero.
First impressions are often correct.
You were dog.
I answered.
No, Tim. No. Casey has spoken.
Tim, Fast Money is over. No.
Casey asked Chris the question.
If I might get a word in edgeways, I answered my first question incorrectly, my second question correctly, and I answered the bonus question correctly without it even being asked.
No, you did. You did. I do apologise. Tim was the winner on one point.
Thank you very much.
You and your big man.
Chris. How many viewers in metropolitan Sydney did Monday night's episode of Brothers and Sisters receive?
Half a viewer.
Half a viewer? Incorrect. The correct answer was 309,000.
No, it's...
My questions were...
Wait, hold on.
Was like, what was the percentage for my first question?
No, it was actually...
It was the odds.
Oh,
it was only an 860 quadrillion high number.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to get.
Actually, isn't that viewing figure for Brothers and Sisters similar to what we got last week?
I thought we had 7.
No. We mean 700,000, Chris.
Yeah. No, when they say 7,
they obviously just take
it to the power.
I've got a comment to read out, a bit of backslapping for the team. It's from a friend named Fiona who
says,
Michael,
no? Okay.
Excellent show, Chris. Yeah, I think her name might actually be Michael, but you know, we'll leave it up. And she says, excellent show, Chris. I stayed up 47 minutes past my bedtime because I was so engaged and entertained. Give everyone a high five from me. High five, guys.
No, we can't. No high fives.
I can't touch your hand, Chris. I'm pretty sure you got a disease.
Oh, actually, that brings me... I've got a joke. What happens if you cure swine flu?
I don't know. Well, if you would obviously not be you.
You'd get ham flu.
Oh, yeah.
If only we had canned laughter. We are out of time on the show today, though. It is almost 1 a.m, so we do have to say goodbye. And leave, separate,
just,
so we can be alone again, because we really don't like each
Casey,
other.
Casey, I made a mistake.
Hmm?
I shouldn't have revealed the punchline until next week.
No, you shouldn't have. All good jokes will make you wait a week before you find out the punchline.
Exactly.
We're gonna go out on a song in a second, so to introduce ourselves, I'm Casey, I'm joined by Tim.
Timothy.
And Mateo, the rightful winner of Fast Money for this week.
No.
I don't think you... What was the question you answered correctly?
I was the winner. He answered a question half right. I answered two questions correctly.
I was originally the winner.
Not the bonus.
Casey, why don't we...
Tim's favourite was my mistake. I gave you half a point for the cuteness question.
This is going to get physical, so I think you should go to the song.
Is the song Let's Get Physical?
It's not. It's a song from the Dark Was the Night compilation benefiting the Red Hot organisation, which is a charity raising funds and awareness for HIV and AIDS. The song I'm going to go to is a song called Cello Song by The Books featuring Jose Gonzalez. Good night, guys.
Good night.